In today's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with Dr. Crystal Guevara from RP Strength and co-author of the Bodybuilding Anatomy book. Crystal and I spoke about appetite regulation and weight loss, mindset approaches when it comes to habit change, and the importance of form when it comes to strength training. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Crystal, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Crystal. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Crystal Guevara. She is a community manager at RP Strength and the co-author of the Bodybuilding Anatomy book, which is coming out next month. I'm super excited to have her on. Welcome to the show, Crystal.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Lisa.
Well, I'm excited to talk about all things weight loss, strength training, and all the rest of it. But before we get into that, I would love to hear more about you. You have a master's of science in chemistry and a doctor in osteopathic medicine, but I'm just generally interested in how you got to where you are today.
Oh my gosh. And we could take up the entire hour talking about that. I really wanted to be a chemist, studied chemistry in undergrad, ended up going to grad school for it, and just sort of realized I really wanted to help people in a different way that did not involve being alone in a lab very odd hours of the night, making molecules. So I took a couple of years off, reevaluated what I wanted to do, ended up going to medical school. I ended up choosing family medicine because I loved taking care of people from womb to tomb, as we call it in family medicine. But I was also interested in sports medicine and athletes. So I spent an extra year doing a fellowship in sports medicine. And then a couple of different reasons, but pandemic happened. And so I felt like I needed a little bit of a change of pace. And so I started working for RP in the marketing department. And then found myself kind of, in the YouTube department, just sort of doing anything and everything to problem solve. And so I've been at RP for about 3-4 years now. And then I do some medicine stuff on the side, but my main job is mostly non-clinical.
Very cool. So I love how broad you're approaching all things health, really. You yourself are also a passionate power lifter, and I believe in jiu-jitsu, you're dabbling a little bit as well. So I love seeing and hearing about all of this. But before we go into the training route, something you're quite passionate talking about also is weight loss and in general, or more specifically, I guess, GLP-1 at the moment as well. So yeah. Maybe you can tell us a little bit what provoked that interest in particular.
I've struggled with my own sort of weight from as young as I could remember. I grew up always sort of at least sort of 20 to 30 pounds heavier than my peers. I was always very active, loved playing sports, always picked a sport. Anything I could participate in growing up, but my appetite was always just clean plate club back in the 80s and 90s. That was a good thing. We're growing, you should be able to do that. You should do that. But it just sort of kind of felt like I had this sort of empty pit as far as my stomach goes, like my hunger signals were just always sort of through the roof. And then did the whole diet thing, all the trendy diets in high school, the cabbage soup diet, I'm going to not eat bread diet. I'm going to do a lot of cardio. I didn't pick up any weight training for years. Did commercial programs where we had to count points. And it wasn't until undergrad that I decided that my only way for me to do very well in school is to basically just leave fitness alone and just focus on getting good grades by any means necessary. So I was very sedentary. I gained a lot of weight. I graduated from undergrad at around 200 pounds, trained smoker, and went to grad school in that shape and sort of started to reevaluate. It was in grad school that I really started to reevaluate. This is not healthy, nor it is very sustainable. So I spent a year or two just trying to whittle down my habits from what it took to get me to 200 pounds to getting somewhere close to 150 to 160 pounds. It was a very slow process, but it was very much set me up for everything's built upon itself in that sense. So I'm very grateful for that. I stopped smoking. I started to just cook at home and the meals that I made were not very tasty or pal. Looking back, it was like I grilled some vegetables, slapped it between two pieces of bread, put some mayonnaise in between there for to make it tasty, and that was a meal. But when you think about what I was eating beforehand, it was all takeout, it was all very high fat. In comparison to this thing that I had in front of me, it was a much better solution compared to the alternative. So, and just kind of went from there, started lifting weights in my late 20s after completing a half marathon and decided I did not want to be a runner. That was cool, but not really interested in it. And then picked up the love for weight training and then haven't gotten rid of it since. So.
Thankfully, that's definitely a great habit you have picked up there. There are a few things I wanted to touch on. So, first of all, you mentioned you felt like you were ever a pit that was never full. You felt like your appetite was just never ending. And I think this sort of constant food noise is something that a lot of people report. And I think now with various weight loss drugs, that's often where I hear or where I see the main benefits that they just say, like, I don't think about food constantly anymore. Is that from your knowledge and experience with people with weight loss drugs or weight loss in general? Does appetite play a big role, and what role does GLP-1 play within that?
Appetite is it's a drive. I wish if there's something that I could just really impress upon people who haven't had that struggle, it's just this gnawing. It almost feels like you're suffocating and you're desperate for oxygen. You really, I don't know if there are times where that hunger drive is so intense that you cannot think about anything else. There was a period of my in my life where in med school, it was the first semester of med school, and I had dieted down to 130. I was eating very low calories. I was eating under 1,000 calories, but I thought, willpower, I have to have willpower. This is just what I have to do to maintain this body weight, and it just is what it is. And I just remember suffering for months and not being able to sleep because I would toss and turn because my stomach would be growling so loud that I could hear it. And this intense drive to eat is just so intense that I can't go to sleep at night. And then I wake up the next day completely exhausted. Exercise is in the tank. I'm not functioning as a human being and ended up failing anatomy in med school, had to retake it. And for these drugs, for this particular class of drugs, that just goes away. And I can't, it's become a game changer in the sense of like it's different than a lot of the other medications that are used for weight loss. Some off label, some are FDA approved. Some of them are very stimulant based. It's not the same. It is completely different feeling compared to the GLP-1 agonists in general. It's just it makes achieving a calorie deficit very easy. And with that does come some pros and cons, but at least for the hunger part, it's absolutely life changing for a lot of people.
Super fascinating. That's definitely feedback that I've heard from people that were using it, quote unquote, correctly, whatever that meant in that instance. I mentioned some side effects potentially being nausea, and of course, some people use it incorrectly if they don't have a high protein approach or don't strengthen at the same time. But nonetheless, I do think that there are really a lot of benefits, potential benefits to it anyway. But how does our body actually naturally create GLP-1?
So GLP-1 is a hormone that we naturally derive. So once we ingest food, we have these cells that line the intestines that, as the food passes through, the intestine cells signal that there's nutrients coming. And so it will create the hormone, the GLP-1 hormone, that ends up getting released into the bloodstream. And then it signals a couple of different things. It signals to the pancreas, like, hey, we need insulin because we have this bolus of nutrients or this big blob of nutrients coming. And we want to make sure that glucose is utilized properly. We want to make sure it goes to our muscles. We want to make sure it goes to the liver, etc. The other things it does, it can tell us, like, hey, we're feeling full. So those are the main things, the GLP-1 hormone. The problem with the GLP-1 hormone is that it doesn't, that effect, its signaling effects don't really last that long. It has a half-life of about 3 to 5 minutes. And then a different enzyme that we naturally make comes in and deactivates it. And then the byproducts end up getting excreted out through our kidneys and into our urine. So it's a very short half-life. Doesn't happen. And so that becomes the trick. And that's a huge reason as to why researchers have spent decades trying to study this pathway, because this, people with type 2 diabetes who they do have produce insulin, but for whatever reason, the insulin is just not, you're just not making enough, or there's some sort of resistance. So it seemed like a natural pathway for researchers to try and find a medication to attack that. So if we can find a drug that attaches onto the GLP-1 receptors and have it bypass the enzyme and last a little bit longer, we can feel not just the effects of having the pancreas release a little bit more insulin, but we can also, once they discover that there was this weight loss component, people were like, hey, maybe we should also take a look at that. So it's kind of the long and short of GLP-1,
And
if
are
that makes
there
sense.
specific things we can do to help our body produce GLP-1, or like specific things to eat or anything like that?
Not necessarily. I know that there are people who have promoted some sort of supplements to produce GLP-1 naturally. I wish that would be the case. I've taken a look at some of these supplements just out of sheer curiosity, and I haven't really been impressed with anything.
Gotcha.
So I think eating the basic principles of nutrition, of eating a well-balanced diet, getting protein in, getting fiber in, making sure you're hydrated, all of those are still relevant and still apply here. Unfortunately, they just don't really, if you're really trying to maximize your GLP-1, I feel like you're kind of missing the forest from the trees, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
absolutely. I guess to the point of you saying you felt in comparison to other people, you never really felt full. So that brings me to the question of, is there a connection between appetite regulation and genetics in general? Is that a thing? Because sometimes people quote blame genetics for their results, and we as coaches often kind of laugh at that or roll our eyes at that. But I
Yeah.
mean, to an extent, I don't know if there is a truth to that.
I don't have any specific, like, this is your gene. If you have this gene, it's hard because there's so many genes that are attached to obesity. But I also think the other part to make it a little bit more difficult is that for people who are overweight, fat cells don't go away unless you have them surgically removed. So adipose tissue is very active in that it sends a lot of signals. And so I think that also plays a huge role in appetite regulation, and as well as, like, just even trying to, gosh, I'm just kind of struggling to figure out a way to. So it's always going to be on. And until somebody has their skin surgery or actually has liposuction to get those cells removed, they're always going to be turned on. And I find that it may be a little bit harder for some people than others to lose that weight. So.
Right. And then, of course, pairing that with lifestyle models that we've been shown by our parents or our environment in general. Yeah. So, all that combination, that makes complete sense. What I love about your personal approach to changing your life was you mentioned you looked at your situation and you said, what brought me to where I am today? So clearly that shows your mindset and your reflectiveness. And I think that's a really good way to go about it for anyone who wants to change anything in their life, whether that's weight loss related or training or any in particular things that they're not really happy with. And is that how you work with clients at RP Strength as well? Or what kind of mindset approaches do you have?
I do have a small telemedicine practice where it's hard to say because some patients I manage medications, but there are some clients who I don't manage any of their medication. I do provide some sort of second opinion sometimes, but more often than not, it's just me doing strict nutrition and training coaching. And so I always end up mixing, like, are they a patient? Are they a client? Whatever. They're just somebody. They're somebody I work with. And so I tend to do gravitate towards the slower approach is better, and working towards very small, sustainable behavioral changes, which I think some people might not gravitate towards that, and that's totally fine. But I especially after trial by fire of my own experience. I just don't know necessarily if I would be willing to like, do put somebody on a meal plan. You can only eat 4 ounces of chicken breast and 40 grams of oatmeal per meal. That's just not my speed. I'm more of let's take a look at what you actually can do and like, what your situation is like. How many jobs are you working? Because I do have people who are single parents, they work more than one job, their schedule's all over the place. And it's like, hey, let's find something you can do consistently and then build up that skill set, but also that confidence too. I find that when people are starting out, it's very overwhelming to go from they are starting here and they want this outcome that looks here. And I'm trying to get them to really focus on building that confidence and building that skill set and really trying to not necessarily shying them away from this outcome goal that they have in their mind, but really just getting them to focus here. So that way, it's not, I don't like setting people up for disappointment. So I don't like selling people like, 12 weeks, get shredded, get abs, when you have over 50 to 100 pounds. Plus to lose. It's just, we're going to have to do this in slow steps. Also, a lot of people I've noticed who are on this medication and aren't really, they're kind of left to their own devices. A lot of people are trying to stay on a caloric deficit for a very extended period of time. They're exhausted. They're not really lifting. They don't want to do anything. And then they're, I don't know what to do. And then everybody's like, oh, we got to find this medical reason for you being tired. And I'm just like, hello, you haven't taken a break from dieting in over a year. You've lost 70 pounds and no crap. No wonder you're feeling like total garbage. Maybe you just need to take a break and let your weight plateau for months before you decide to, I'm going to go on another fat loss phase.
Such a good point. Giving the body a break, hormones, metabolism, etc., but also your mind the chance to catch up and be like, okay, this is who I am now. These are the lifestyle changes that I'm choosing to make on a daily basis for the rest of my life and not just for the duration of this 6 week or whatever period. But yeah, I think it's such a good point, just meeting the person where they're at. And there are certain specific clients, I guess if you guys have people that step on stage or whatever, they're going to be working with a meal prep plan, something at least along those lines, and very dialed in. And but the majority of people that you work with and we work with as well, more general population, where we really want to focus on those long-term changes. And I'm curious if, since you mentioned you're involved in the community management at RP Strength, what role do you think community really plays in the long-term success of any kind of change like that?
Oh my gosh, such a huge success for not just habit building, but also even recovering from injury. Studies have shown that having a positive social network is super key. When people are alone and isolated, which is what a lot of people like to do, outcomes seem to be a little bit worse than if people have the support of people. I also find that trying to get the clients to involve try and build their own little mini communities is also super important. Making fitness like a family thing, making gym time like a total family affair, like that to me is what really gets me going, is seeing them pass along that information and the things that they've learned, and making it fun and just you that it's going to be a really good time when people like this is like now my life, right? Now my kids go to the gym. My kids look forward. They hold me accountable going to the gym. So I'm totally for it because there are times where I've seen people who don't have a support system or have family members or their spouse. It can be hard because you are literally changing who you are as a person. Your priorities have now shifted to this new thing. And, unfortunately, sometimes not everybody is really down for the ride.
I actually hear that quite often, where people say, "Oh, the people around me, I feel like I'm treading or swimming against the stream. They're holding me back." And sometimes even the partner initially, maybe out of fear of like, "Okay, that person is changing. Does that mean I'm not good enough now anymore either?" And that's usually not what the partner is saying. So I think very open communication in relationships where one person is ready to change sooner than the other, is really, really important, and not trying to change the other one along. But but just leading by example or just doing whatever you can. But yeah, certainly those online communities are amazing, and I love, just like you say, it's so wonderful to see if in a community like that you sometimes like people share recipes and they comment on each other's stuff and they're like, oh, I wasn't gonna go to the gym, but I did it anyway and it was the best workout, and someone else comments, and it's really beautiful to see. I read a wonderful quote on your Instagram, and I just wanted to share it. And it said something like, "A stronger midlife means embracing growth and the power to redefine who you are with confidence and purpose." And when I read that, I was like, "Wow, that is absolutely wonderful!" And I would just love to hear what inspired you to write it, and also what exactly you mean by that, maybe.
A lot of different things. I find that after all that medical training, all of that school stuff, I found myself kind of in the COVID, in the middle, so end of COVID pandemic. I felt really lost. I felt very alone in the sense of like, maybe medicine was a mistake. To be very frank, I was very much, I don't know what I want to do with my life. And I just spent the last 12, 13, some odd years preparing myself for this one thing. And now it's not happening. And I don't know, like, why am I doing this? What's wrong with me? Why can't I just go and like, suck it up and get a normal physician job, 9 to 5, 5 days a week in clinic? And took a lot of soul searching of, and giving myself grace that it's going to be okay. Just because I am trained as a physician doesn't mean that the only thing I know how to do is be a doctor. That the things that I have learned as a physician, I can take those tools, effective communication, follow-up, scheduling, coming up with ideas, executing them. I still have those traits and I still have those skills, and then I can apply it to wherever I want. And so I feel like my 40s has just been a whole host of like, who am I? What am I here for? What is my purpose here? And am I going to be okay if it's not like this thing that I had imagined it, this physician job that I was envisioning the last 10 years? It's okay. It didn't work out. And that's not the end of the world.
I think it's not even not the end of the world. It's actually, it made you who you are today, and it made you a better coach today. And I think everything in life sort of happens for a reason. I think it's such a beautiful message for anyone out there who's in their 40s, 50s, or even earlier or later, and questioning, should I be doing this? This might not be my passion. It really resonated with me as well because, well, I grew up in Germany, and there, at least when I grew up there, it was very much the belief, whatever you go to school for, that's what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. And while I did study exercise science, et cetera, after that, I changed and became a police officer for several years. And then I was like, I cannot keep doing this. This is not my passion. But it was kind of like a stable thing, and you have that quote unquote security of. Of course, it's not secure either. But at some point, I just got to a place where I was like, I cannot do this any longer. And of course, I had a lot of doubts about it. But I love in your statement how you say, with confidence and purpose, and even if we don't feel it in the moment, perhaps, that's one of those things where faking it, or at least telling yourself over and over that you're confident and that there is a purpose behind it, it does drive that.
And just doing the thing, right? Like, do the thing. Even if you're like, I don't know, just do the thing. And then afterwards, think about like, how did that go? Did that go over well? What didn't work? Last summer, I was like, podcast, I was still trying to find my voice, still very afraid to speak. Because also, as a physician, we were very much taught, like, you know, speaking in public, got to be very careful. You don't want to say the wrong thing. You could get somebody could come after you. So, and at the same time, a lot of people with the explosion of TikTok and social media, you have all these influencers who don't have that, who just sort of pop off at the mouth about anything and everything. And I've seen my physician colleagues get really upset about it. Oh, misinformation. And it's like, well, what are you doing? You're sitting here complaining to other people about somebody's post on the sidelines. Why don't you jump in and provide us with something worthwhile to watch? So that's, and I remember Andrew Coates kind of made that reel of like, jump in. Everybody's here. Everybody, you know, we're start contributing. Stop standing on the sidelines critiquing and start participating. So, and that's what got me to like, all right, time to throw my hat into the ring and kind of
I
see.
love it, and I think sometimes we all get caught into in that Well, it's not analysis by paralysis, but it's like that perfectionism where we're like, oh, and I need to have all the 20 resources stated in there and references and blah, blah, blah. No, it's Instagram. You just say what you, that's going to be more important and more efficient or getting the message out there than if you spend 2 weeks writing the perfect post and so on. But I love that you have been contributing to the Bodybuilding Anatomy book. I'm curious to hear what prompted you and the other authors to bring it out. And yeah, how was the experience of writing it?
Oh my gosh. So the publisher actually reached out to my husband Mike about revamping it because I think the last time the second edition was out was quite a couple decades ago, I believe. And so they wanted to revamp it. And my husband kind of, was like, well, Jared Feather, he's an IFBB pro. He's a very accomplished bodybuilder. He has a master's in exercise science. And then he had asked me, who is a physician, would make sure that like anatomy seems pretty sound. And so I think because of my sort of like will get projects at the fin crossing the finish line at all costs. So I was definitely excited about that. So I think a lot of the most of the technical writing, as far as the posing chapters are concerned, as well as the exercise selection is concerned, was a lot of Mike and Jared. I focused more on the anatomy side of things than coordinating the photos to illustrations. So we had a photo shoot, and then an illustrator would come and illustrate from those photos. So they're all hand-drawn. And writing it was very fun. I remembered, the irony is not lost on me that as I mentioned my first experience with the whole anatomy class in medical school and thinking about the extreme hunger and having to retake it and then sort of, getting this opportunity to be a part of an anatomy book, it's definitely come full circle because I think I definitely had a lot of feelings about that whole experience that I just sort of carried with me for close to a decade of like, am I going to fail? What's the next class? Am I going to fail? And just kind of holding that on to whatever class I went to, whatever rotation I went to, just always had to go above and beyond to the point where I think at one point my advisor was like, watch out for burnout, yawn above and beyond. And my only concern about you moving forward is like, you might burn out at the, please take some time to rest at some point.
Well, if even your supervisor is saying that, then probably were some indications for that. But no, I think it's great that you were able to like draw or make that chapter come to a little bit of a close for you. But I'm sure you've taken that hard work ethic also into the gym with you. And I have to say, I love your training videos on YouTube and even just like seeing you in powerlifting and so on. I'm not very familiar with martial arts, but it's wonderful to see just your display of great technique as well. And nonetheless, even though at least from your profile it says you're powerlifting focused, it very much shows that, well, obviously form is important to you, but also the mind muscle connection, and you move through some of the movements very slowly, which really spoke to me. For example, the other day it was like a hack squat or something like that, and I tell like bottom, you were like or it looked like you were trying to focus on keeping everything engaged, the glutes engaged and stuff. And so often in those strength sports or heavyweight sports, we could see, let's just get it up somewhere somehow. So no, I honestly I love it.
Oh, thank you so much. It took, and I will admit it, I should post some of my older videos up because it did from powerlifting to transitioning to more of a physique kind of focus. It took years to control those movements because I had spent so long dive bombing squats because I was trying to lift as much weight as possible. And it was a huge ego hit to decrease the weight and focus on going slow and having that pause. Huge ego. I'm human just like everybody else. And man, I remember when I think Mike had programmed paused squats, even as early back as 2017 or 2018. Man, it's taken how many years since then to like finally get to a place where it's like, you can't cheat this out. You're not gonna put two plates on each side. The days of squatting 225 are over, you know, the time being, and like really need to shift your focus. And so thankfully, yes. Now as I get older, I really need to make, and with jujitsu, I really need to be mindful that I'm not doing anything too stupid because my joints, I'm already putting my joints at risk in
Yes.
jujitsu. So I would like for my lifting to now needs to really complement my jujitsu, and I'm just not doing anything too crazy to, I'm just looking to maintain my muscle mass. So
Great. And in terms of those two goals, do you have any competitions that you're looking at doing this year or in jiu-jitsu or in powerlifting?
I did do a local meet in jiu-jitsu not that long ago, and then I have the Arnold coming up at the end of February, early March, the first weekend in March, so I will be out
Oh, very
yeah. So
soon.
we'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
Exciting. Super cool. So when it comes to exercise technique and so on, how do you guys ensure proper exercise technique with the people that use your strength training app? Or is that kind of, are there different tiers where people can send you videos or maybe post them in the group or something like that?
Yeah, no, great question. I think for a lot of the people who use the app, is most of the people who end up using the app are a little bit more on the intermediate side of things. And so there are within the community, people do place upload a video for form checks. I do know coaches who, as part of their check-in process, especially those who do training, who do that side of things, also look at form checks. So, and then for myself, I do ask my clients to give me videos to see where they're at. And people do take some time. And so, yes, have this perfect form, or I spend a lot of time. I understand that not everybody's got different leverages, everybody's got a different place that they're starting at. And so I also do the small tweaks here and there. I don't want to come off. Still, I'm trying to find that balance between coming off as like, you got to fix this, this, and this, or just, you know, fixing one thing at a time. And then also just leaving it there. They're not injured. This isn't going to break them. They're still getting their technique down. Leave it alone. We still have years of, you know, newbie gains to go through and elicit. So, like, just leave it alone for this week.
I think that's a really great point because sometimes clients can get discouraged if they send you a video and you get back to them with like 12 points and they're like,
A
oh geez, I
lot.
don't even know what to
Oh.
focus on. And
Yeah.
there's really no point of doing that. I think as long as negative patterns don't get really ingrained over time
Yeah.
and we're making sure we're staying on top of that, that's
Yeah.
really a good point. But yeah, to bring this full circle also because you touched on burnout. I would love to hear from you,
Yeah.
how someone like you with many different goals and you wear many different hats and you have, it sounds like you're very, very, very goal driven, or you probably have a lot going on in these next few months as well. And then your husband, who's also very much go, go, go. How do you make sure you're not getting to that point of burnout these days, or that you're also giving your body the rest that it needs in order to perform well?
No, that's a very great question. Still trying to work out those kinks. I think making sure recovery, I think for somebody who is a little bit on the goal-oriented, go, 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 the recovery as a goal is also like, I think stating that out loud makes it another like to-do list. And for me, that's what will get me the buy-in to like take it seriously, if that makes sense. So by 7 p.m. is usually the cutoff point. No more. Nobody's dying right now. There's no medical emergency in as far as nutrition or training goes. If so, you should call 911 or whatever, 011 or whatever your country's code for an ambulance. And then also on the weekends, very much like we're gonna do this, and it is not training, but also just checking in. I think having a great communication of like, hey, this is what I'm feeling, because they're markers of diet and training fatigue. So for myself, I know that I get a little bit more testy, a little bit more impatient. I get very feelings of feeling overwhelmed, and I think just knowing, taking a look at my app, taking a look at my training app, taking a look at where I am in my mesocycle, and taking a look at what I did last couple of days as far as work. I think being able to just take a look at that and be able to communicate with Mike, like, hey, this is what's going on. I think I need to take like half a day, or I think I need to cut the day early and just go touch grass, go for a walk, and not do anything for the rest of the day. So I think having good communication, but also being very much in tune of like, yeah, I don't feel great. My sleep is terrible. I feel very overwhelmed and like, ah. So I think going through a couple of those cycles also was also very helpful in the sense of like, I feel like with people and like, or at least for myself, when I get to peak week in a mesocycle right before a deload, I will definitely feel very overwhelmed every 4 weeks. It feels very similar. It's like having a period. It's like having a regular period and having PMS, and you're like, I have the X, Y, and Z every month, and having a plan for what am I going to do at when that happens. Do I take back off the brakes? So, and then also making sure to schedule in actual staycations and vacations in the calendar to make sure that those are already built in, because if not, the chances of me taking a break are.
Well, I like the combination of having like observable metrics, keeping track of your sleep, your training performance, and so on, maybe HRV or whatever, but at the same time, preemptively having those routines, as you say, like scheduling your routine. For me, it's usually I force myself to do 10 minutes of foam rolling after a workout, just to really calm down, actually, not necessarily for the
Oh my
foam
gosh.
rolling, or scheduling in the meditation, as romantic as that sounds, but it's scheduled
Oh,
in. As you say,
yeah.
if it's in there, it will get people like us to do it.
Exactly.
No, really great tips. And Crystal, I just truly appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with me today. You've given us a lot of great insight. And of course, I'm going to make sure to link your social handles in the show notes, to link the RP app in the show notes as well, and your upcoming book as well. So truly,
Oh.
thank you so much for the time.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa, for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Crystal. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.